This message is brought to you by DoNotAge.org, the longevity research organisation that's on a mission to extend health span for as many people as possible via products that actually work. Start your journey today at DoNotAge.org and use code LLAMA for a 10% discount. That's LLAMA.
There was a recent questionnaire in the United States with people being overweight and going up to a certain age, and what they really want in life and how they define wellness is really, I can move with others, I can be part of something, and I'm not tired.
Hello again and welcome to the Live Long and Master Aging podcast. I'm Peter Bowes. This is where we explore the science and stories behind human longevity. This episode is brought to you in association with Amazentis, a Swiss life science company that's pioneering cutting-edge, clinically validated cellular nutrition under its Timeline brand. Now, just over a year ago, Amazentis teamed up with Nestlé Health Science to carry out joint research into mitochondrial health. It's a subject we've delved into in some depth during recent episodes, and today we're going to hear more about it from the perspective of the research wing of a company that you may know better as the maker of chocolate bars. We'll try to join the dots. We're going to meet Dr. Stephanie Bloom, Head of Translational Research at Nestlé Health Science, where she's worked as an immunologist for much of the past decade on projects as diverse as pediatric allergies, gastrointestinal health, aging, and therapeutic enzyme therapies. Dr. Bloom, welcome to the Live Long and Master Aging podcast.
Good afternoon.
It's very good to talk to you. You say good afternoon because you're in Switzerland right now. I'm on the west coast of America. We're in entirely different time zones, but it is good to link up with you. And of course, we are doing this remotely. We're living through this pandemic as well. And maybe we will talk about coronavirus in a few moments. But I want to start with my reference just now to chocolate, because I'm sure many people listening to this will associate Nestlé with sweets or candy, as they say here in the United States. Nestlé Health Science doesn't make chocolates. Entirely different part of the organization involved in nutritional science research. Can you tell me more about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Nestlé Health Science is a part of the bigger Nestlé group, but our focus is really on the preservation of health and also to provide or to design products destined for patients who are in clinical nutrition, being it inside a hospital or outside a hospital. We also have a huge development and business in healthy aging. And so we are caring very much about new trends in longevity.
What exactly does your role entail?
Basically, my role is to see where is the scientific innovation. And the thing is, that is always very early. So you get a reaction on a cell, or you get a result from an animal model, and then to say, okay, this may be promising to put it into a human and see if this works also in human, and then bring it into the business. It has then to fit our strategy, of course, and it has to be actionable. That means I cannot bring something in where I fell in love as a scientist, but it brings us up to 20 years to show a benefit. So this is this critical professional experience you need in translational research to identify, suggest it, bring it in, get exposed to a lot of challenges, which is correct. Beyond the science, can I sell it? Can I produce it? Can I taste it? Right? Because fancy ingredients most of the time are very bitter and not food-like. So these are a lot of aspects we have to put into front of ourselves and have a critical assessment what to do. And this is not only the scientist or the clinician in the company. This is also the marketeers, the people who produce the product in our product technology centers, these kind of things, which makes it very difficult, but also very interesting, because you never walk alone. You have always cross-functional teams, being it inside the company, being it with external partners, to try to make the right thing. The challenge we have is, especially in nutrition, that everything we like to see in the scientific discoveries, in papers, in animal models, by nature is not easily transferable into human, right? Because we are all different. We have different genetics, we have different microbiome, coming back to that. And we eat differently, we live differently. So we cannot straight ahead say it works in the mouse, it will work in you and me. And this is the challenge we have, to put it into something where we have a product at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, this is the challenge, isn't it? And what you're essentially doing is you are joining those dots. And it does highlight, doesn't it, the importance of collaborations?
Yes, yeah. Because here really this is, you cannot walk alone in that, because a scientist is always biased to the results, right? The more fancy the pathways are, the molecular targets are, we all get excited, but we have to bring it back into reality and into feasibility. And by the end of the day, does the consumer eat it? Right? So because we cannot inject, we are orally depending. So we have to make kind of food out of it, palatability, digestibility. You don't want to get diarrhea from the new compounds. You want that everything gets, or most of it gets absorbed in your body, and it's not just going through the digestive system. All these kind of aspects have to be worked on. And there you need these different aspects and also the different expertise around that opportunity, I would say.
And when we talk about nutritional science, I think as we grow and as the understanding of diet and foods spreads, we are beginning to clearly realize that there is a very strong correlation between nutrition and our everyday health, and perhaps even those foods that we eat more for pleasure than we associate with good health. So can you maybe explain to us how important it is to consider what we eat as almost a form of medication?
Yeah, I think we get into the awareness of food if we eat too much food. Think about the obesity and the increasing number of people with type 2 diabetes, which is really linked to overnutrition, right? Or we think of nutrition if we have to go on a diet. But what is coming more and more into the awareness of the consumer is really that our basic food have components which are contributing to health. And it's not only calories or proteins. It's also these plant-based secondary ingredients which confer health. And the amaranthus ingredient is one example. Maybe we touch more base onto that in the coming minutes. But I think the awareness that a balanced diet, but also increasing your exercise and moving around, is already something everyone across every ages can contribute to have a good health status. And I think this is generally related to wellness, to quality of life, and also to awareness of I have to eat not only meat, I have to eat vegetables and fruits, and having, like our grandmothers and grandfathers, have a balanced diet, which is really constitutive for anybody's health.
Well, I would indeed like to talk in much more detail about that. Before we do, Nestle Health Science has, just give me an idea of the reach of the organization. I think you have a presence in more than 60 countries around the world.
Yeah, we have a global presence. Normally what we do, we adapt our products also to local, of course, needs, but also what people and preferences, what people like to eat. So there are still food products. So we also do not want to neglect the pleasure of eating, even if some of our foods are enriched in so-called bioactive ingredients or health-conferring parts of the nutrition. So this is something we really are vigilant about, to have a portfolio, not only one product, but also have a variety of healthy offerings. And that can be In the consumer space, so that you can buy that either in the grocery store or in pharmacies, but also having the same adapted one in hospitals.
And of course, that must have to take into account the extraordinary diversity between nations in terms of the wealth of nations, the wealth of people. And that is probably the primary dictator in terms of what people actually eat, is what they can afford to eat in many countries.
Yeah, absolutely. The affordability, of course, plays an important role, but also the education on simple things which are affordable. For example, the normal diet you have, enriched in fresh things, is affordable for a lot of people. It's not that you have these very high designed and enriched foods only. You can have supplements to your diets in terms of different formats. It can be pills, it can be sachets, or you sprinkle over your daily food to enrich in certain things. So there is, of course, a notion of, can I afford that on a daily basis? But we always look at these kind of cost determinants, that it becomes to a broader base affordable for many people. But also you have to think that we have to invest in R&D also to deliver the science, and sometimes also clinical trials. So there will also be some products with a premium tag, right?
Again, we'll dive a little bit more into that. I want to just talk about you and your role with the organization. I mentioned you've been with Nestlé Health Science for about a decade now. Your background is in biochemistry and pharmacology. That's what you read at university and got your PhD in.
Yeah, that's correct. And then I started to specialize in immunology, because I thought a functioning immune system across all age is also something very important contributing to health, right? We see it now with the COVID pandemic, that a good functioning immune system is something you can start with to combat an infection, a viral infection or bacterial infection. Even so, in the context that you might not have a treatment at hand, right, which is basically totally new for us again, because we are used to have treatments available, right? So this is something I got really interested in. It's very complex, but I thought I would dedicate my scientific career and life to that. And joining Nestlé, and I did that more than 10 years ago, actually 20 years ago, being in research first, was really that notion of, what can I do with my daily life, being not forced to take any drugs, to contribute to health and contribute to a proper immune system, but also other proper cellular functions, right? Which is very important to maintain health and have a health management instead of a disease management, right?
And we'll continue this conversation in just a moment.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
And you mentioned COVID-19, the current crisis that we're all trying to figure out. We're trying to get through these extremely difficult times. Where are you at the moment in Switzerland? I know a lot of European countries have seen a bit of an uptake in the number of cases and infections in recent weeks. Here in the United States, it's still an extremely difficult issue, especially in the southern part of the country. But where are you in Switzerland?
Well, of course, with the after the real confinement, when people started to go out again and to meet controlled wise, but still meet people, go on holidays, coming back from holidays, of course, numbers are increasing, but it's still on a controlled basis. What Switzerland did was really to leave it on the cantonal, on the regional governmental decision to introduce regulatory measurements like wearing masks in public places and if you go your grocery shopping. So this is in place again. I think what we all learned is that there will be severe cases, and we have to make sure that enough places in the intensive care units are available once you have this, and you get not the health system is not overwhelmed with these severe cases. But I think as we learn, as every country in the world, learning by doing, is that we watch the numbers, tests are available, and then quick reactions on what you have to do to go back with the infection rates per day. Because what we see is infection rates, it's not death rates, right? So there is an awareness. And I think also the people get aware of this is not something light to handle. You never know how it will go out for you with a certain age.
So as an immunologist, what have you learned during this pandemic? I think for ordinary people, for lay people, a realization that our everyday health is perhaps even more important than we perhaps once thought. And that is that if we are in good health physically and mentally, we are probably better able to withstand this virus.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we observed is that during, without any education campaign, sales in vitamin C, vitamin D, micronutrient supplements went through the roof, right? So people have enough knowledge to see what can I do immediately for myself in this time of there's a pandemic and there's nothing which can help me, right? Again, this is the moment where people get responsible, more responsible for themselves, but also for others around, neighbors, family members. And they get more aware, and they also see that as an opportunity. What can I do for myself, for my health? And the first thing which comes across, which what I can do every day, is have good nutrition, have good foods, have fresh foods, have variety of foods, right? And then supplement it with things which can help, which are nature's little helper to make you confer a better health status, right?
I know in the UK there's a big push against obesity with the British government as well. Again, there's been a realization that obesity is clearly a major negative factor.
Absolutely.
If you are unlucky enough to contract the virus, that you stand a much worse chance of beating it, or perhaps a much slower recovery if you are overweight.
That is correct. And that is a link to the fact that if you are obese, you have a higher level of, let's say, inflammation going on in your body without having an overt inflammation. But this is something which is throttling in you. And then if you get a challenge, you have much more risk not to respond adequately. So I think if we can get people to more to move around, right? Nobody has to become an athlete all of a sudden, but to move more around and have a good nutrition, it's already a good basis for health, for improved health, right?
And this is a challenge, isn't it? And I think you mentioned education. It is really going forward. It is all about education and getting that message that you just articulated through to people and getting it to stick, and not just to stick for 6 months, but to stick throughout people's lives.
Yeah.
And I know there is a tendency for some people, it's like people are trying to lose weight. It may be it goes well for the first 3 months.
Absolutely.
But then people then go back into their old lifestyle. And I guess for a lot of people in your profession, that this is the challenge, to make that message, that healthy living message, a permanent one.
Yeah, absolutely. And but what I think is if the by experience, if people lose weight, they get more energetic, they get more energy to move, they have pleasure, they don't feel intimidated by their body, because everyone gets the feedback, this is not what you should look like, right? There was a recent questionnaire in the United States with people being overweight and going up to a certain age, and what they really want in life and how they define wellness is really, I can move with others, I can be part of something, and I'm not tired. And this energy, this is an experience you can feel, right? It's not if you feel this, then you get a different motivation. I think this is also what sticks you basically then to really change lifestyle, right? Because that's what's needed. You have to change your lifestyle, which is not always easy, right? On the long term, as you said. But I think if you feel this boost of energy and you have an idea of how can I escape this vicious cycle, then it is rewarding for you, and you will go on with that, right?
Yeah, and I don't know whether it's a good analogy or not, but I suppose you could compare that boost in energy that you get through having a healthier diet and certainly increasing the amount of exercise you do. You could say, in a way, it is like a drug. It's like a boost of caffeine to just inject yourself with some life. But of course, you're not using a drug. You can do these things very simply through thinking of your food, if you want to think it as a drug, or those plant foods as essentially being drugs that will give you a very cheap and easy boost and make you feel much better.
Absolutely. And by the way, you can enhance this effect by nutritional supplements. Again, we come to the Amazantis one, where you have a naturally derived compound, which is put in a form for you that everyone can use it, because you don't need any conversion or transformation in your body. And then this gives you this extra boost. And it's not only that it's kind of marketing, like that's the next generation of caffeine. It is really shown in scientific experiments and also in clinical that it will give you more energy, because it will help you to get rid of the cellular waste, right? So people can understand that. You can transform that to a message that everyone can understand that. And then if people feel it, they will not feel it after 1 or 2 days, but they will feel it after some weeks, that something is changing with their body and with their motivation, right? Energy is also a lot about, do I have enough energy to motivate myself to get up in front of the television and go out and do something? And then you have the pleasure. And that's a nice experience. It's a rewarding experience. But you need this, overcome this first threshold, right? To get up out of your seat.
So you mentioned the work that Amazantis are doing, and maybe it's a good point now to get into that in a little bit more depth and talk about the extremely pure form of urolithin A, which is the compound that you referred to. But before we do that, maybe just talk about why Nestlé Health Science and Amazantis decided to team up with this kind of research. Where is the synergy here?
I think the synergy is in the common vision that you can have food-derived compounds enhancing a biological benefit. This is where the company visions cross. And what Amazantis did very nicely is that they investigated a fruit for a certain component, which is known, and we call it polyphenols. It's very chemical. And then they made the observation really step by step. So there's a tradition that if people, for example, in Turkey, they eat a lot of pomegranate, because that urolithin A is coming from that fruit. And it is in the history, it's already demonstrated that it confers benefits in elderly. So, and now they look into, with the new tools of biochemistry, pharmacology, and clinical assessments, they look which part of this fruit is responsible for certain benefits. And they come to a class of chemicals, which we call polyphenols. And then they say, okay, they make the observation that in some people, if they give this extract, it will have a benefit and others not. So they come to that conclusion that not everyone can confer or converse this active principle into something which acts in the body. And they come to the conclusion it's depending on the bacteria you have in your guts. So you have people who can use it and others who cannot use it. So what do? They synthesize the active form. So then you wipe out that influence of your microbiome. And then everyone can use it all of a sudden. And then they start to look into where's the benefit. And they focus very much on the mobility, so the impact on the muscle. But they also go really very, very deep into the mechanism of action and say and find that this molecule will help to clean cellular waste, which is accumulating as you age because your repair systems are not working optimally. So this is a common thing, not only in a muscle cell, it will also work in the same time in a brain cell or in the heart muscle cell. So this is a unique, what we call mode of action. And then after several studies, also always going back into animal models to see how does the thing work and go back and forward into human clinical trials, they show that indeed it will also work in humans, right? And it will work, it will help them to make the muscle more energetic. So by the end of the day, you are better in moving, you're better in walking distance in elderly, these kind of things. Very relevant and easy to understand for everyone who has problems to get up off a chair and walk.
I don't think there's a single human being who cannot appreciate
exactly,
that.
Exactly,
exactly. Everyone, as you grow older,
exactly,
understands what it's like to be maybe losing your balance a little bit or be a little bit
absolutely
frail, maybe not completely unable to walk, but just not as good as you were 20 or 30 years
exactly
ago.
Exactly. Or you take a lot and you're tired after some steps. And I think everyone either knows someone in his surrounding who has that or can project himself in 25 years to have the same problems because that's natural decline in age, right? So I think that is the fascinating story about Amazantis. They really went from A to Z.
And so this is a research partnership. And as you say, we're moving forward. This isn't complete and with science with an ending. It is continuous and growing science. And the key role now for people like yourself is to look at the effect of this compound, this pure form of urolithin A, mitopure, as it is known from Amazantis, how it will affect humans, not just in the next few months, but in terms of long-term studies moving forward over a period of time.
Yeah. So as I said, as this, the way the urolithin A is acting on cells, helping them to get rid of waste, we will also look at other tissues and other functions, right? We are pretty sure about the muscle and mobility, but we don't know anything about, does it help in cognition? Does it help in liver health? So we are walking around, if you want, in the body to see, are there other benefits where this mode of action plays a role? And we're also looking at immune stimulation, for example. We know in the elderly, for example, the immune function, again, is not optimal because we age, right? So we are looking also at that aspect. Do we see something? We have now the compound, we can give it, it is safe. So we can work really in different, what we call, areas of interest to see if there is a benefit or not. So I think this is the beauty, having this at hand. And all in sense are really coming from food, if you think it through, right? So very natural, and you don't need to eat kilograms of pomegranate. Nobody will do that every day, right? But you can have this condensed form, and this is the beauty of it, and you can include it in your normal diet.
And you mentioned food. I think one of the key aspirations of Amazantis is that people will see this as a food, and that Mitopure urolithin A in its pure form won't necessarily be available as a tablet, as a pill for people to take. It will be part of perhaps a shake or something that you can have with your fruit in the morning. It is part of your daily meal plan as opposed to a traditional pill, which I think for some people is a turn-off, just the thought of taking tablets. But if it is in a food form, perhaps it's more palatable for people.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And you have different possibilities of consumption. You can sprinkle it really over your breakfast, or you can have it as a drink. You can have it in a yogurt, or you can have it in a pill. But, you know, you can choose. And choice is important. Choice is important for adherence to something, right? If I'm forced to take 3-4 pills every day in addition to everything else, I may have to take in forms of medication, No, why would I do that? But if I have the choice and I can do on Tuesday this and on Thursday that, that's perfect.
And to be realistic about this, you say it is safe. Urolithin A, it is a natural compound. It is it originates from fruits. It is safe. However, there are still question marks, and this is why science is constantly evolving, but question marks over the long-term implications, and as well as looking for the positive effects on the human body, in different organs in the body, you will be looking for potential negative effects as well.
Well, I think the studies have already looked at the safety aspect, and then for bringing it to the market, even a food component has to have some safety dossier. So it has to have undergo some regulatory stringencies. So that is ticked off. So that was studied. On the long term, normally what you do not do with food is you cannot overdose it, right? And so that is the good, and the risk and benefit ratio is very good in a food derived compound. It is, compared to a drug, it is much weaker on the immediate effect, right? But it, on the long term, it confers a better benefit risk ratio. So basically you cannot poison yourself. And I think if it's out in the market, there will be studies, post-launch studies ongoing to see if there is anything coming up as a long-term. But basically what you do with nutritional compounds, you excrete them. If there are too much, you excrete them.
And in terms of people's attitudes towards taking supplementation, nutritional supplements, I think people come in different categories. There are those who believe, like I do, that it is, and increasingly believe that it is an insurance policy to guard against what we're not getting from our otherwise normal or normalish diets. And to be honest, none of us are eating the perfect diet all of the time. And as you say, we don't all have the same microbiome in our guts, and we can't all benefit in the same way from the natural products that come from fruit. So it is, in terms of our diet, it is an insurance policy to doubly make sure, if you like, that we're getting enough of what we need. Others tend to be more negative, I think, towards supplementation, saying that, well, if I can't get it from my general diet, from my natural foods, there's a certain question mark over it. There's a certain resistance to taking supplements, and perhaps not least because of the cost of supplements.
Yeah, that might be. But again, if you feel the benefit, then I think you will overcome that. Of course, you can say, so what should I take? Vitamin C, vitamin D, and vitamin E, and fish oil, and urolithin A. You have to make your choices, right? But again, if you feel the benefit, then you will stick to it. I'm convinced.
I tend to agree with you. But you've actually just encapsulated there, I think, what the issue is, that increasingly there seem to be presented to people so many choices, vitamin C, the fish oil, the urolithin A. And for the layperson, that the real challenge is to make that decision as to what is good for me, because very often it's very difficult, maybe from your personal doctor, your personal physician, who doesn't necessarily have all the answers. It's difficult for ordinary people to make those crucial decisions as to what they spend their money on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we need some proper education and guidance there, which we as companies have, and also experts in the fields have to give. But again, the choice is also, where's my biggest pain point, right? What is... if I'm highly inflamed, maybe then I want to have some fish oil in addition to that. But if I have overweight and I want to increase my, let's say, my daily activity index or something, then I would go for something else. I think there's also an opportunity for me. It's always good to have choice, right? And if you can combine it with the right information behind it, which I agree, in nutrition is often either controversial or there's a lot of good things to do and to eat, right? This is why people take multivitamins. Then you have it in one pill, right? If it helps or not, but then it's done, right? think more we get education about the value of nutrition, the more people will have all the understanding to do their choices.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely the crucial point, because I think what we're asking people a lot of the times to do now is self-educate on these issues. Yeah. And as you say, to identify your own frailties or your own problems and issues that could benefit from a supplementation or a change of diet. But then we're not necessarily the best people to make those decisions because we don't have the education and the scientific background. Let's just change tack. You and I are talking mid-August, actually on the day here in the United States, when Joe Biden is introducing to the world Kamala Harris, his running mate for the election in a couple of months' time. And she is a potential female leader, political leader, of years to come. And wondering, as a female scientist leading an organization, what role you think you play in terms of encouraging new generations of scientists, and especially women scientists?
Well, I hope I will. I'm an inspiring leader. So that means that I share my values and I share the company and my vision, and that I have empathy and leave room for creativity and make sure that female but also male talents are promoted get the right recognition, right? And I think this is important. Being male or female, as leaders, we have to see what is best for the company. How can we share the vision and how can we motivate others to buy into our vision? Because you can only be good or excellent if you have passion. I'm convinced by that. If you do a day-to-day job, you go home by 4, that's not what you need in that context. You really need fascination and then the willingness really to take one obstacle and one challenge after the other. You have to believe in what you do. And I think this is something I strongly confer every day and also encourage next generation female leaders to speak up, to stand in the wind, and to take courage to take it through. And nobody has to do it alone. That's the good learning. If you do it, you can have others helping there and have a great team. So I'm a big believer in team efforts.
And does the world of science, the world that you operate in, does it nurture female talent in the way that you would like to see it,
as
well as it could?
Yeah, absolutely. The whole diversity discussion and gender balance, I think with my experience in Nestle, I had never a disadvantage being a woman. I think you have to convince by your experience, by your personality, and some people are leaders and others are not. That doesn't mean they will not contribute less to the company's goals. I think this is the beauty of my professional life. I would not say now with a diversity clause I could make it to get recognized. No.
And I ask that question in part because hosting this podcast, I am offered interviews with scientists around the world from different organizations, and I notice that overwhelmingly, I am being offered male scientists to talk on different topics in the area of longevity. And I try, whenever possible, to strike that gender balance.
Yeah.
But there does, from my perspective, maybe from a media perspective, there does seem to be still a bias towards those older male scientists. You don't see the diversity that you would like to see sometimes.
No, and I think it's related to the fact that already you have a gender bias in these kind of study fields, in biochemistry, engineering, mathematics, you have less women. And then not everyone has the persistence to go through all the steps. And I also have to say, I have a husband who makes it possible that we have a dual career. I do not have to negotiate to go to work or something. That was always normal. But a lot of the female talents get lost on the way to career. This then basically you see at the end of a way that female leaders are spears. And something which has to change, of course. But I think also now the society recognizes that it's also rewarding for the males to have the chance to be in a family environment, right? Because there's also the other side that people are forced to take the advancing role and they cannot care for the family. So if it's more equalized, then I hope you will see more women in leading positions.
Yeah. Exactly. Let me ask you, with your breadth of experience in science and specifically the work that you do and the subjects that we've been talking about in this podcast, what have you learned through your own studies that you apply, you could say, perhaps to your own life on a daily basis with your own health and longevity in mind? Is there something that comes to mind that you do because you thoroughly understand it and believe it to be good for you?
Yeah, basically, what I always did, I always focused very much on non-processed food and having a lot of fruits and vegetables and then do a lot of sports. So I think there is already some kind of healthy basis. And then by my work I do in a food company, I also see the possibilities of food. And I learned a lot during that time. I mean, I'm a classical biochemist and then immunologist. They don't know anything about nutrition. So I had a big learning in my professional time in Nestle to learn on food components and how good they are and also how you can reinforce your daily food. But basically for longevity, I think what is important is really, and this is, again, not only for me, but for everyone, be able to move and be able to have your common sense together. So cognition plays a role. Having energy to be part of something. I think we are social animals. So this is someone does not want to stay at home alone because he is too weak to get out of the chair. So I think this is overall human behavior, and I'm not an exception to that.
And that actually brings us full circle to the current crisis that we're facing, that so many people are staying at home and so many people are alone at the moment,
exactly.
Which long term, tragically, I think is going to cause us some more problems.
Yeah.
And just final question, and I often ask this question of the experts, the many experts I speak to around the world in terms of longevity, because the aspiration of this podcast or the theme of the podcast is aiming for a good health span as opposed to lifespan, the number of years that we're healthy and vital and agile and involved in life and society. That is what the goal is, not necessarily to live to be 120 or 130, though that may happen one day. In terms of your own health span, is there something you focus on in terms of how you would like to be when you get to be a very old person? Do you have an image of the kind of life that you would like to be living?
Yeah. So if I project myself in very old, I would still like to be able to do some sport and be really intellectually capable of reading, of really participating, being with others, exchanging things, traveling, for example. So all these kind of things I would accept, maybe, sorry, that it slows down in speed, but that I'm still able to do this and have a social life. Being able to read still a scientific review article in old age or something.
That sounds like a very good aspiration.
That sounds like a plan, does it?
It sounds like a great plan, yes. And I wish you all the luck in the world with it. Stephanie Bloom, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Bye.
And as ever, if you'd like to dig a little deeper into the topics that we've discussed today, I'll put some links into the show notes for this episode. You'll find them at the Live Long and Master Aging website, llamapodcast.com. That's llamapodcast.com. The Llama Podcast is a Healthspan Media production. This episode was brought to you in association with Amazentis, a Swiss life science company that's pioneering cutting-edge, clinically validated cellular nutrition under its Timeline brand. And if you enjoy what we do, you can rate and review us at Apple Podcasts. You can follow us in social media at Llama Podcast and direct message me at Peter Bowes. It's always good to hear from you. Many thanks for listening. FlexBeam is a portable red light therapy device that's now being used by leading athletes, including the Norwegian tennis player Casper Ruud.
Whenever you put the FlexBeam on, you feel it starts to work right away. I need something that can help repair all the fibers that I have broken in the serves.
The infrared lights penetrate your skin and makes the muscle tissue recover faster. FlexBeam, I keep it with me all the time.
Recharge Health is offering Llama Podcast listeners an $80 discount on the purchase of a FlexBeam device. Go to the website recharge.health and use the code Llama at checkout. That's LLAMA. You'll also find the link in the show notes for this episode.